Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Gary Lieber for the appellant. With me this morning is my partner, Nessa Abrams. This is an appeal from a grant of summary judgment from the United States District Court in the Southern District of Indiana, in which the court held that a subcontracting clause between the defendants was not a violation of the hot cargo provision of the National Labor Relations Act. And therefore, we had sued under the antitrust laws, asserting that this subcontracting clause was a violation of the antitrust laws, and that it was not protected by the construction industry proviso. Now, Your Honor, there is absolutely no legal foundation for this decision whatsoever. There is no court, in our view, which justifies this decision or this holding.
Is your key assertion that this traffic control business that your client is in is not on-site construction? Is that the essential point?
That's part of it, Your Honor. Maybe the larger part is that we are not, quote-unquote, under the Labor Act, primarily engaged in construction. We also assert that we're not on the site of construction, but that's a second standard that the defendants must demonstrate in order to have a court rule that it's protected by the construction industry proviso. I don't want to say it's necessarily our lead argument, but I think it's the argument. The primary argument is that we are incapable, as a matter of law, from signing this from participating in the construction industry pursuant to this agreement.
You know, we're all experts on this because we drive back and forth. You know, we're always seeing these people painting lines, putting cones down, picking cones up, putting these concrete dividers and all that. And isn't that an integral part of construction?
Well,
highway construction.
I would say that it is not an integral part of construction, and I would go back to the definition, which was cited in our brief, under Section 8F of the National Labor Relations Act. And if we do not meet that definition of construction under that under our primary labor law in this country, then we are incapable of executing a pre-hire agreement, which Section 8F permits in a very narrow area. So whether or not, Your Honor, and I would beg to differ.
What is this definition you're relying on? Which, in E or F or what?
The definition is from the Labor Board.
Not in the statute. You're not talking about.
No, it's not. It's not in the statute, but it's defined as. Construction covers the erection, maintenance, and...
Where's this you're reading from?
I'm reading from the leading authority on the definition of 8F by the NLRB, which we did cite. It's called the Indio Paint and Rug Center case, 156 NLRB 951.
What's that? What's the citation again?
156 NLRB 951.
Okay, so that's your... And what did they say?
Well, they define construction... as construction covers the erection, maintenance, and repair, including replacement of integral parts of immobile structures and utilities, together with service facilities which become integral parts of structures and are essential to their use for any general purpose. It includes structural additions and alterations. Structures include buildings and all similar work which are built into or affixed to the land. Construction covers those types of immobile equipment which, when installed, become an integral part of the structure and are necessary to any general use of the structure. This includes such service facilities as plumbing, heating, air conditioning, and lighting equipment. In general, construction does not include the procurement of special purpose equipment designed to prepare the structure for a specific use. Beyond that, Your Honor, the NLRB discusses, and the courts discuss, whether or not an employer is capable of signing a pre-hire 8F agreement based upon, in part, this definition and the purposes, the underlying purposes of the section, which are to accommodate the interests of construction. The interests of construction as defined under both Section 8E and Section 8F of the Act.
So it includes highway construction and rebuilding, right?
There's no question about that.
And isn't one of the historical, traditional purposes harmony, to preserve harmony among workers at a construction site? Isn't that,
Your Honor, that follows perfectly into our argument.
But your people come along and they pick up the cones, they put the cones down and so on and all that. That's very intimately involved with the people doing the construction.
Your Honor,
I mean, if you put the cone in the wrong place, you know, you're endangering the workers. So wouldn't you want the traffic control people and the construction and the actual workers who are doing the building or rebuilding to be, friendly, or at least not antagonistic?
We certainly want everybody to be friendly. However, Your Honor, and if I may, one of our witnesses said, and I quote, typically on ICI job sites, that's the defendants, there are no other employees around. We are the first to arrive and the last to leave. And that is really undisputed. And at worst, it's a material issue in dispute, but it's clearly undisputed. And what all the cases say, Wolke and Romero and Connell, they all say that the purpose of Section 8F and the purpose of the construction industry proviso is to accommodate construction.
You often driving along, you see on one segment of these endlessly rebuilt interstates, one part of it, you've got the people putting down the cones or picking up the cones, and another place, you know, a mile on, you have people working on it. It's mechanical, as you portray.
Your Honor, I wouldn't.
Also, if you didn't like these people, you know, you want the traffic control people to be very careful, right? Because their job is to protect the workers while, you know, allowing the traffic to proceed. So you don't want them to be having a casual attitude toward the building workers because they get paid more, something like that, belong to a different union.
Your Honor, with all due respect, there's a distinction that I need to address based on what you just said. The people who I, first of all, that's totally anecdotal, but the people who you see as you drive by and as I drive by telling you to stop for the other...
I know that. They're separate. I'm talking about not the flagmen. I'm talking about the people who are picking up and putting down the cones or these concrete dividers or, you know, painting the strips and so on.
I would say that they're not there when the construction workers are there 95% of the time.
They're not there in the sense that you can't be... As you say, they install the safety devices before the work starts and remove it afterwards. But apart from the, you know, temporal proximity, they're also working in different stages along the same highway. So they may be putting down the cones at one point while a mile on construction has already begun, right?
Your Honor, there's no nexus. We acknowledge our job is safety. We acknowledge that we need to be safe, but that has nothing to do with the statutory...
There must have been a time when there wasn't a separate traffic control industry. It was just all part of construction, right?
Before the 1970s.
Right.
Right, before the interstate highway system.
The proposition is that somehow what's happened, growth of specialization, a separate industry has emerged.
That's true. And our people bear no resemblance to construction workers.
Why would the labor board be the best organ to make this determination? Is there any mechanism by which this issue could be presented?
There is. And we raised it and we withdrew our charge. I'm not saying it may or may not be the best way. It was never litigated.
I thought it was litigated in the context of another
similarly
situated claim.
Well,
It was and decided against you.
Your Honor, it was definitely not litigated. It was a refusal to issue a complaint. We have cited authority for which the court is to give no deference to that whatsoever. It was not litigated. If it was litigated, there's deference that this court should give to a decision of the NLRB, just as they should give deference to the definition of construction, as I just stated. But it was never litigated, and this court is to give no deference to it.
I thought there was a determination that a clause of this sort passes muster under the or fits within the confines
absolutely
of the construction industry proviso.
Absolutely not true. Your Honor, the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board has unreviewable authority to decide to prosecute. There was a decision not to prosecute. There was no adversarial proceeding, no decision by the National Labor Relations Board.
Well, couldn't we refer the issue to the board as say it's within their primary jurisdiction to make such determinations?
No.
Why not?
Because the board's procedures, as a former board employee, I can tell you the board's procedures are not self-initiating. An employer or a union or an individual has to file an unfair labor practice charge. You might ask the board for their opinion, but you could not refer
for an
evidentiary
hearing.
No, no. And this court in the Rowley Schlimgen case decided issues, and courts all and appeals courts all over the country decide issues relating to the application of the construction industry proviso.
But of course, the paradox is, you rely for your definition of the scope of a construction on the board, and you think if you regard the board's definition as authoritative, you'd think it's logical to say, well, the board having rendered this authoritative definition ought to tell us how it applies to this case. Wouldn't that be sensible? Otherwise, we're going to rely on our anecdotal knowledge as commuters.
The problem
right?
with
you don't
that,
want that.
Well, first of all, there's a record in this case, and there's no reason why.
Scanty, though, about the actual.
I agree with that. Summary judgment should not have been granted. We should have had a trial. But the bottom, Your Honor, the traffic control industry bears no. Bears no comparison to construction.
But that misfocuses the argument.
It does not misfocus.
And sidesteps the actual text of the construction industry proviso, which doesn't focus on what business the subcontractor is in.
Your Honor,
it focuses on the labor agreement in question and exempts it from the hot cargo rule.
That is what the district court found, but that is incorrect. First of all, this court said in Rowley Schlimgen that you are to look to the underlying purposes of the statute and not to whether or not the employer is engaged in construction. Second of all,
we have to start with the text of the statute.
You can start with the text of the statute.
And if this labor agreement and the clause in question, the subcontracting clause, fits within the text of the statute,
Your Honor,
we don't have to go behind the statute.
The leading case in this field is Canal Construction Company, a Supreme Court decision. Canal was an employer in the construction industry. The Supreme Court held that the construction industry proviso did not apply.
That's because there was no collective bargaining agreement in that case.
That's right, but the statute doesn't say anything about a collective bargaining agreement. So
it says an agreement between a labor organization and an employer in the construction industry relating to the contracting or subcontracting of work to be done at the site of construction. That's what we've got here.
But this court, but the labor board in other cases has held that notwithstanding the fact that an employer is in the construction, the general contractor is in a construction industry, there are certain other factors that would exclude the application of the construction industry proviso. We cited those cases involving an anti-dual shop, another employer that had a joint venture. The court and the NLRB have looked to the underlying purpose, which is to avoid job site friction, for which there is none here, because we are not on the property with the employees. And let me also point out that we had another clause that predated this clause, which has virtually put my client out of business and prohibits them from operating in the state of Indiana. We had another clause for 25 years that said you must apply the wages and terms of conditions of employment to any subcontractor. Well, guess what? We never heard from them about that. They essentially ignored that, and that is because we do not impact upon this, upon construction. This is a pure power grab, an organizational tool. This union has never organized this industry in 25 years, and they weren't organizing them in 2004.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lieber. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lohman?
May it please the Court, I'm Jeffrey Lohman, representing the Laborers Union Appellees. The subcontracting clause in this collective bargaining agreement is lawful and is protected by the construction industry proviso to Section 8E. Because it's lawful and because it was a product of arm's-length collective bargaining between the laborers and ICI, it is immune from antitrust scrutiny pursuant to the non-statutory labor exemption. I do want to correct one factual statement that was made by Mr. Lieber and United Rentals. The idea that the record is undisputed that traffic control employees don't appear on the job site at the same time is not supported by the record. There is testimony in the record from highway contractors who indicate that they frequently or do work at the job site at the same time.
What is the relation between antitrust law here and this and these labor law provisions?
Well, the relationship, Your Honor, as this court said in Suburban Tile, is that when these provisions are lawful under Section 8E of the National Labor Relations Act, they're entitled from exemption from scrutiny because Congress must have intended that because they're lawful under the Act, they must have intended that they not be unlawful in some other setting.
So why do you mention a non-statutory antitrust exemption?
Well, that's the language that's used by this court. Or it's certainly used by the Second Circuit and the Ninth Circuit, which followed this court's decision in the Seventh Circuit case of Suburban Tile. That's what it's referred to as the non-statutory exemption.
Why is it referred to as a non-statutory exemption if it's based on a statute?
It's referred to that because it doesn't fit within the statutory Sherman Act exemption for labor laws. The statutory exemption applies to agreement or union activity that does not involve an employer. The Supreme Court created the non-statutory exemption in order to recognize that acts that are lawful under the labor laws should not run afoul of
that. Is that a blanket rule so that any agreement that complied with and any agreement that was enforceable under E, say, E or F, would be exempt from antitrust?
The Seventh Circuit, the Suburban Tile decision, indicated that if it's lawful under Section 8E, it's exempt from antitrust. The Second and the Ninth Circuits, the Sunland decision and the Laborers 210, say that if there were some evidence that it was part of some existing antitrust conspiracy, that it was intended for some improper purpose, then it might not be entitled to the exemption. So
if the parties here were trying to stifle, if a competitor of United Rentals was a party and its purpose was to exclude United Rentals from the traffic control industry, that would be actionable? Is that?
Well, I don't know that it would be actionable. I'll say that I think that what the Second and the Ninth Circuit were I think what they were saying is if there were some, evidence of, monopolization or something else that really indicated intent to violate the antitrust laws, that you might have an issue.
Well, if this agreement isn't protected by these provisions, then are you conceding there would be antitrust liability, or would that be a separate separate?
That's a separate issue that has not been addressed by the court. I would not concede that at all.
You might still have arguments that there was no impact on business.
Absolutely.
What about the idea of, is Mr. Lieber correct that there's no possibility of invoking the doctrine of primary jurisdiction to have the labor board make this determination?
Well, as Mr. Lieber indicated, they did file a charge with the labor board. They attempted to invoke that process, and they withdrew their charge. The competitor of United Rentals, which was in a similar position, went through the process. They filed the charge. It was dismissed with a set of factual findings or what the board calls a summary report. Gridlock then appealed that matter to the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. The General Counsel looked at it and decided as well that this clause was lawful and protected by the construction industry proviso. They concluded as well at both levels that this work included work at the site of construction.
But isn't Mr. Lieber correct? There's no mechanism by which you can get from the General Counsel's decision not to proceed further to the board?
That is correct.
So they can't really be blamed for not having gotten the board's ruling. But you say we couldn't say that we will suspend our consideration while the board decides.
We have not asked for that in this case, Your Honor.
Is it possible, or would the board say there's no?
Well, it's certainly possible that United Rentals or any other traffic control subcontractor, or anybody for that matter, could go back to the board and file additional unfair labor practice charges. And if there were sufficient merit to those charges, the board would issue a complaint and proceed through the adversarial adjudicatory process. But it's certainly probative, I think.
But the general counsel could stop the process. Right. You can't go to the board by yourself. You have to have the general counsel.
That's correct. The general counsel operates as the prosecutor of charges, Your Honor.
If a court invited their response, would they respond, do you think?
I'm not personally aware of that having happened.
It's not unusual in other agencies.
Yeah. I do not know, Your Honor, whether there's a process for doing that.
Mr. Lieber says, because you said that the workers and the traffic control people are often present at the site or, you know, at different points in the construction project. But he says that he wants a trial on that. You said there was evidence, but if it's contestable, shouldn't there be a trial?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because the issue, as direct as it could be in Welke and Romero framing, a subcontractor had complained, or I don't know if it was a subcontractor, but the issue was whether or not job site friction was the sole thing that guided the construction industry proviso, and the Supreme Court said no, that the legislative history reveals that Congress intended to protect union signatory subcontracting clauses that were negotiated in the as part of a collective bargaining relationship, irrespective of whether workers are working at the site or not. So truthfully,
there must be a limit, right? Because you couldn't say, well, we want to have this contract with a subcontractor who supplies the asphalt or something like that, right?
Suppliers and rental. The record is clear that both ICI and the laborers have taken the position from the outset that supply and delivery of materials is not work at the site of construction, and there's been no effort made to apply the subcontracting clause in that set of circumstances. United Rentals could continue to supply and deliver. Any other subcontractor can continue to supply and deliver. This clause does not prohibit that.
Well, what about people who when the project is finished, what about people who come along and do landscaping? How are they treated?
No. I mean, well, they, to the extent that the work is subcontracted by the signatory, ICI Highway Contractors, and it's at the site of construction, then they would be subject to the subcontracting clause if it's work at the site of construction.
What do you distinguish between that and the supply of materials?
Well, the difference is whether or not you're actually performing work at the site of construction.
That's semantic, right? I mean, if you deliver a load of asphalt or something, what about these, you know, churning ready-mix cement trucks? They come up and they dump their cement. What are they?
The board has held that that is not work at the site of construction, and the reason for that is because you have no choice but to put the concrete in specific spots on the project. That's different in this particular circumstance.
That's a bad reason, right? I mean, you have no choice but to have workers there, right?
Yeah, well, you have no choice in the sense that, take for example, with traffic control materials, the supplier could come bring it to the job site, drop it off. The workers of the highway contractors then do all of the work in connection with that traffic control process at the site. Concrete's different because you obviously can't drop it off at any sort of central location. You have to put it actually in its various spots on the job site. I would like to, Your Honor, address this argument regarding Section 8F that they make, that United Rentals makes, that because it's not primarily engaged in the construction industry, it argues the subcontracting clause can't apply to it. If United Rentals can't sign an agreement pursuant to 8F, we'll assume for a moment that they can't. They're in no different position from a non-union subcontractor who chooses not to sign it, from another contractor who's, well, actually United Rentals says it's also signatory to a 9A agreement with a different union and says it can't sign our agreement. Congress specifically considered and heard testimony from such people and decided to adopt the proviso in any event. So all of those concerns have been addressed by Congress, and those claims have been rejected. I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lohman. Mr. Stanley, I think we have to have some time.
May it please the Court, I will be very brief. I represent Indiana Constructors, the employer, Employer Bargaining Association. To Judge Posner's point about the necessity of a trial, I think that there's a little snippet from the Ninth Circuit's en banc opinion in Sunland, which is cited in the briefs, 1986 opinion, which really goes to the heart of that. And it says, essentially, Congress would not have exempted the construction industry from the prohibition against hot cargo clauses, only to have such provisions create liability under the antitrust laws. Moreover, the policy behind the provision would be ill-served if parties to such agreements were required to undergo trials on charges of antitrust violation solely because of the hot cargo provision or its intended anti-competitive effects. In this case, as the employer, we resisted this provision. ICI resisted this provision for more than a decade as the union wanted it. The other unions had successfully bargained it. This was a bargain. The ICI very much wanted to have a substance abuse testing provision that had teeth to it. The union in exchange wanted this subcontracting provision. This was exactly the kind of arm's length bargaining that that is intended to be protected by the National Labor Relations Act. Moreover, from our perspective, my client's perspective as an employer, to now come in and say, well, sure, you entered into this agreement and you are in the construction industry and you comply with the face of it, but we're going to go back and look at the circumstances of every subcontractor to determine whether you violated the antitrust laws makes it impracticable for us. I mean, I think that this is the beauty, I think, of the district court's decision, which is the question that Judge Sykes asked, isn't it enough that the union and the parties who enter the agreement are engaged primarily in the construction industry? And I think the answer to that is yes. That's where the inquiry should end. It doesn't really matter. It shouldn't matter whether United Rentals is in the construction industry.
You're saying F is alternative to E?
No.
I'm still confused about the relationship between E and F.
Well, I don't know. E is where the provision, that it has both the prohibition against hot cargo and the exception in the proviso, are both in subsection E.
Right, so that's one defense.
Yes.
Right, but how does it relate to F? So F is it alternative? Is F just an alternative?
I'm not aware of how F factors into anything, at least in our argument.
Well, but you're just relying on F.
No, E. No, I did not.
No, F. You're relying on the fact that you're Indiana Constructors members are engaged primarily in the building and construction industry, and they're making an agreement with the union with work. You're having a subcontract which involves employees in that industry, right? And that's your basis for thinking this is a lawful agreement.
I believe that language is in Section 8E. That's what my notes indicate. But that's
enough. Well, it's where you have the hot cargo clause and its construction site exception.
8F deals with the ability to enter into the pre-hire agreements. And that's what United Rentals is saying. They can't enter into a pre-hire agreement because they say they're not in the construction industry. That comes into their argument that they say, United Rentals say we can't enter into an 8F agreement, even though everyone else, all the other traffic control employers have. They nevertheless maintain that they cannot.
Because I don't think E refers to, I don't think the word primarily appears in E. That's what.
No, you're correct. It just refers to engaged in the construction industry.
So you're focusing just on E?
Just on E, that's correct. Okay. That's correct. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Stanley. So, Mr. Lieber, your time expired. We'll give you a minute.
I thought I still had all my rebuttal time, but I'll try and be quick. The linchpin of our argument is that we're incapable of entering into this agreement, and therefore the decision is irreconcilable under national labor policy. Are incapable of entering into a pre-hire agreement, which means our employees haven't chosen to be represented by this union. It's a very narrow...
But maybe you could explain the relation between E and F.
Well, I think the best way I can explain it at this point in time is to respond to Mr. Lohman's argument. He says essentially that 8E should trump 8F. And I'm saying 8E is a very narrow exception to an anti-competitive illegal course of conduct that frequently not only violates the labor laws, but violates the federal antitrust law.
If your people, contrary to your argument, if they're working at the construction site, isn't that a defense to the hot cargo clause?
At least in part, it is. However, and I would direct your attention to the case that the district court judge cites for that purpose, which is an NLRB case called Stife, and the district court says, well, United Rentals really looks a lot like Stife, more so than any other case. As a matter of fact, there is no real case. This is a case of first impression, really, that has these set of facts. But Stife, if you read it, it involves where the company was, employees were directly involved in bringing material to the site and actually involved alongside construction workers.
I'm just trying to understand the relationship. So as I understand it...
Your Honor, I've read the legislative history.
Don't interrupt me, please.
I'm sorry.
So as I understand 8E, if your people are at the construction site, working at the construction site, so on, then there's no violation of the hot cargo clause. There still might be an antitrust violation. Mr. Lohman almost conceded that. So let's assume that. Okay, that's E. Now, F, how does F figure in? Because I understand the argument, F is about the Indiana constructors being primarily engaged in the building industry. But does F figure in your argument, or is it
irrelevant? Of course, F is the keynote to our argument. We are an employer. We are not primarily engaged in the construction industry. In order for us to comply...
But the language says employer engaged primarily in...
That's any employer.
Employer.
Any employer. What this clause wants us to do, in order to comply with it, is to sign an agreement with the laborers. We are prohibited by law under Section 8F from signing an agreement with the laborers, not just because we have a relationship with another union, but because the only way you can sign an agreement without a determination that the employees, that the union represent a majority of the employees, is in the construction industry. That's the only way you can have this kind of agreement.
Okay, so I understand that. So you're the employer to which the primarily... And the construction refers in F. Okay, that's fine.
That's correct.
Now, F is a defense, right? So even if you're not shielded, I see. But you're saying is if you're not within F, then you,
more
violate,
than a defense.
A or, you violate A or B.
Is right. The question we're asking is, does federal labor policy and antitrust policy going to allow an employer not primarily engaged in the construction industry from being prevented from participating in business as a matter of law? We cannot participate. We would be violating the law. Now, Mr. Stanley says, well, you know, there are other contractors, traffic control contractors, that signed the agreement after the agreement went into effect, and they obviously violated the law. Without an unfair labor practice being filed by anybody, there's nothing that would be done, but it is clearly in violation of the law. Now, do the courts want to sanction that behavior? And if you read Wolke and Romero, and you see that case talked about craft unions and safeguards of 8F, we can't sign an 8F agreement. Wolke and Romero covered the entire spectrum of the construction industry, but it excluded, because it wasn't part of the facts, this little tiny bit of employers that are outside the construction industry that don't quit their job when the job is over. We have continuous employment. We're not working with the same tools. We don't belong to the same association.
Okay.
It's a very compelling argument, Your Honor.
We understand your argument. Thank you, Mr. Lieber and Mr. Loman and Mr. Stanley.